Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Continuing with our study of the 11th canto, today is a really sweet section. We're concluding Uddhava Gita, and the conclusion gets very sweet. Just briefly, I'd like to mention how Uddhava is feeling this anticipatory grief around losing Krishna. And so that's what's charging this whole situation, this space between him and Krishna. And as the moments go by, he's feeling it more and more intensely because he knows any moment now he's going to have to leave Krishna, and there's going to have to be a separation. So anytime we're really attached to somebody, then we, you know, to that degree, we miss them if we're separated. So it creates a wonderful opportunity for that intensity of focus and intensity of love whenever there's impending separation. We even experience that at Krishna House, right? Like the goodbye parties for devotees, right? Oh, goodbye party, and everyone's feeling that, like, oh no, they're leaving, and there's just an extra sweetness. There's like an extra love that is felt in those gatherings. So just remember that as you're thinking about the situation. Here is Uddhava sitting with Krishna, and they're wrapping up, Krishna's wrapping up his final words to Uddhava. And just think about how Uddhava is starting to feel this grief coming, you know, the separation, fear of separation. And that'll be more in tomorrow's class as well. But I just wanted to kind of remind you of that. That's the emotional component of this discussion right now. So we're going to do verses 20 through 35. And we can, what I'd like to do is, I find it sometimes helpful to just stop between them and we can talk a little bit instead of doing all of them and then, you know, talking. So I'm just going to say some prayers. Om Agyana Timirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Umilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prashtaya Bhutale Shimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Vyamani Namaste Sarasvati Devi Gauravani Pracharani Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Vashchitari Shitarini Vancha Kalpatru Vastra Kripa Sindhivya Vicha Patitanam Pavani Vya Vashnani Vya Nama Namaha. Okay, so text 20. So we can take turns reading the translations. Christina, do you want to start?
My dear Uddhava, because I have personally established it, this process of devotional service unto me is transcendental and free from any material motivation. Certainly, a devotee never suffers even the slightest loss by adopting this process.
So this is a really encouraging verse. And yeah, just the guarantee that Krishna is assuring our success if we plug into his program. So Krishna has created personally established bhakti yoga, and somehow we get to plug into Krishna's personal program, right? Isn't that amazing? If you think about, like, imagine you're working at a company and the manager says, okay, we have this special thing going on now where if you check these boxes, you get promoted to the next level. And I personally have designed this to facilitate for all of you. And if you want, you can take advantage of it or not. So that's kind of the situation we're in here. The Supreme Personality of God has personally established this. So I really like that expression, personally. So there's some, anyway, I don't know the exact Sanskrit word that he's pulling that from, but it's a very personal process. So if we apply ourselves fully to that, we can be guaranteed that we're never going to lose. There's never going to be a loss in our journey. So just if you think about, if you have a really benevolent boss and the boss knows, like, oh, you stumbled, but you're still working towards this, whatever goal it is, right? And they hold on to what you have done in the past instead of just forgetting that. Can you imagine in the material world if we experience that more, how amazing it would be? Usually in the material world, we have, because we're all forgetful, we tend to just remember people for where they are right now. Like, oh, right now they're struggling. And then they become the person who's struggling. But oftentimes we forget, oh, they did this, all the previous things that they did. But Krishna never forgets those things. He has a memory that's forever in his heart of his devotee's progress. So a devotee never suffers even the slightest loss. That can also apply to their life in general, that in this case, it's specific to the process, because in the purport it says, one who serves the Lord without personal motive can never be defeated in his progress. So that was kind of the purpose of this verse. Okay, next, 21. Okay, this one right now, the one we just did? Oh, yeah. Yes, yeah. It's very encouraging. Okay, text 21.
O Uddhava, greatest of all saints, in a dangerous situation, an ordinary person cries, becomes fearful and laments, although such useless emotions do not change the situation. But activities offered to me without personal motivation, even if they are externally useless, amount to the actual process of religion.
So the first thing that strikes me is that if someone can be crying in a dangerous situation, they're crying like, or they have fear, or they're lamenting, but that emotional outpouring doesn't change the situation. Have you ever been in a situation like that, where there's something that's happened in your life that you're frustrated by? Maybe you're angry, or you're crying, or you're writing in a journal furiously, or something. And you're just getting out the feeling, but the situation's still there. When you're done crying, when you're done journaling, you come back and it's still there, right? That happens all the time in the material world. Usually, sometimes when we're younger, especially as children, we have this kind of idea that we can adjust things a lot more than we actually can. Because, you know, our parents, they take care, they remove the suffering for us, and we feel like, oh yeah, it's not too bad, you know, I'll be able to deal with these dangerous situations. But as we get older and as we step into our own, like, adult lives, we start to realize, oh, I'm kind of one little jiva. I can't do much to change big, fearful situations like this. I can't run to my mom and hide behind her anymore, you know? So we can do whatever we want to, like, vent in those situations, but it's not going to remove the suffering. But, and so similarly with Krishna, in the purport it's described that devotees can cry out to the Lord for protection, but Krishna's always maintaining them, so it doesn't, regardless of them crying out or not, it's not what makes the Krishna take care of them. So, but Lord Krishna accepts such apparently unnecessary appeals to the highest religious process. So Krishna's hearing those calls of his children, just like a parent would hear the cries of the child, right? So even, that's why it's saying here, even if they're externally useless, the activities, like your, let's say your mother is there and she's watching, when you're a little child, she's watching you super vigilantly, right? And she's there looking. And then you do something that hurts, like you stick your finger in an outlet or something, right? And your mother was there looking, and you're crying. You didn't really need to cry because your mother saw it already, right? Like, that's the situation with Krishna. He's so close to us that he knows exactly what we're going through. He doesn't need us to go, ah, Krishna, I'm struggling now, and I need to give you an update about my life, and this is what's going on. And then Krishna goes, oh, okay, I didn't realize, then I'll come and help you. There's not that gap that we experience in the material world. He's right there with us in our heart. Therefore, he doesn't require these external things from us, but he accepts them. Yeah.
I think this verse is also useful for, you know, if people are like, oh, why are you sitting around just like, you know, doing kirtan and, you know, sitting in class when you could be out helping the poor or whatever, right? That this is sometimes a criticism that that people level at, like, religion or ritual or those kinds of activities. It's like, oh, it seems like you're doing nothing when you actually could be out and, like, making a difference in people's lives. But, you know, this verse says that, like, even if other people think that your activities are useless or not, you know, you're not investing your energy in the right place, this is very validating, right? It's like, no, that it matters to me, so it is actually making a difference.
Nice point. Yeah, thank you, Haribol. Nice to see you again.
Yeah, I was thinking of that verse in the Gita where he says, you know, you offer me a little fruit, a little leaf, a little water, because it's talking about tears. It's interesting that if you even offer those tears, it falls under that umbrella of, you know, offering something, and anything is possible for offering to Krishna.
I like that, yeah. That's a nice meditation, the offering of the material tears, because they're just made from body fluid, but they can be used for Krishna.
And make the analogy of a small child who is at school and draws a picture of their family, stick figures and scribbles, and brings it home to the parent. It's, you know, in terms of the quality of the art, it's not very high. Obviously, it's a small child. But to the parent, the love that's being offered is very precious. They'll put it up on the refrigerator and remember the love that was offered by their small child, and it brings them joy. Same is true of Krishna. even we can offer him devotion, even very imperfectly. But if our hearts are sincere and we offer him, you know, real devotion from within, it's acceptable.
Mm, nice. Yeah.
And that's the actual process of religion.
Yeah. I was thinking the fridge analogy, you know, because it's very, especially in America, I don't know if they do this in other countries, but do they do this in South Africa? The fridge and the children's pictures. In India too? Not so much, yeah. so I was thinking that the one difference between this material example of, yes, taking the child's photo painting or whatever and putting it on the fridge, is that in the material world, eventually we have to take that painting down. Either we put a new one or we have to like clear it off to put some to-do lists. That in the material world, those things can't be retained. A parent might have a box in an attic somewhere, like, oh, you know, on their wedding day, they pull it down. I still have these old drawings you did. But usually in most situations, those things kind of get lost with time. But if Krishna had a fridge, for example, he would have like there would be unlimited, all of our offerings from the very beginning ones that we did that were rudimentary, you know, little attempts to serve Krishna, to the more masterful pieces, right? The ones where we're finally learning bhakti yoga and sadhana bhakti.
But the Lord and the parent actually remembers them and treasures them.
Yeah.
Even when the child grows up and goes on and has their own family.
Yeah. Thank you. That's a nice analogy. Yeah.
You highlighting this munificent or loving nature of Krishna. I think that there's a there's in the Bhagavatam or somewhere that Sukadeva Goswami heard him talking about, some devotees talking about Krishna's pastime with Putana, mm-hmm. and how that loving nature just basically took him to that personal aspect of bhakti. And I was thinking about this, reminded me of how, you know, for us, when somebody does something negative, it like overpowers everything else about our beautiful experiences with the person or anything like that. But for Krishna, even though we might do one negative thing, he looks at the bigger picture. And with Putana, it was terrible. She was wanting to kill him, but he took that beautiful thing. So I appreciate it.
Mm. Yeah. Amazing quality of Krishna. So the next verse is very similar. It's my favorite of this section here, text 22. Can you read it?
Spratus is the supreme intelligence of the intelligent and the cleverness of the most clever. For by following it, one can in this very life make use of the temporary and unreal to achieve me, the eternal reality.
Amazing, right? Let's read that. Can you read it again one more time? And just let it sink in. It's incredible.
This process is a supreme intelligence of the intelligent and the cleverness of the most clever. For by following, one can in this very life make use of the temporary and unreal to achieve me, the eternal reality.
Yeah. And then in the purport, there's this sentence. The Lord here states that the most intelligent and clever person in the devotee who offers his temporary, illusory, material body and possessions to him with love and without personal motivation. So that the most intelligent and clever person is the devotee who offers his temporary, illusory, material body and possessions to him with love. So sometimes you read, I don't know if this is striking everyone in the same way, but you know, sometimes you read something in a slightly different way and it just goes, wow, you just, all of a sudden, it hits in the way that we needed. So when I was reading this, I just felt like, wow, this is so incredible that Krishna created a process where we can use that which is temporary and unreal, just this phantasmagoric world that we're living in, and we can use that substance to reach him, the eternal, you know, real life. It's a quite incredible situation that we're in. Any thoughts on that? It ties into the previous verse about using that which is, useless to reach Krishna, right? It's encouraging, isn't it? Yes.
It's the same idea that my last statement is that the picture may be taken off of the fridge to make room for other things on the material level, but the love exchange between the parent and the child lasts a lifetime, or for us, it lasts eternity.
Yeah. Yes, Gopiji.
I think this verse also speaks to the transformative power of bhakti yoga. It's really like a touchstone, and it's very dynamic, so that no matter what situation you're in, there's always, from the bhakti yoga perspective and angle, there's always spiritual advancement to be made, and there's always something profound to be gained. Bhakti yoga is just so dynamic, it can be applied in any context.
Mm, very portable too, right? It can be, like, I like that, any situation, yeah. Krishna made it so convenient for us, this process, that we can apply it in any situation and that it's relevant in every situation, that we can find relevance. So thank you for that comment. All right, text 23.
Thus, related to you, both in brief and in detail, a complete survey of the science of the absolute truth. Even for the demigods, this science is very difficult to comprehend.
Okay, and so now we're going to read the next five verses, and we'll read them all in a row. Krishna's going to say what happens to one who has heard this. So we've all been listening to this for a few months, right? So these are do you know the name of this kind of verse? Palashruti, right? So the fruit of the hearing. And this is Krishna's, on top of the fact that Krishna's teachings are so wonderful and they can transform our life, in addition, he's also adding on these benefits. Those who hear this also get this. It's just like perk upon perk, right? You just get this and this, like a like one of those too good to be true deals. So let's hear them. Yeah, text 24.
I have repeatedly spoken this knowledge to you with clear reasoning. Anyone who properly understands it will become free from all doubts and attain liberation.
Anyone who fixes his attention on these clear answers to your questions will attain the eternal, confidential goal of the Vedas, the supreme absolute truth.
One who liberally disseminates this knowledge among my devotees is the bestower of the absolute truth. And to him, I give my very own self.
Is it on?
He who loudly recites the supreme knowledge, which is the most lucid and purifying, becomes purified day by day. For he reveals me to others with the lamp of transcendental knowledge.
Anyone who regularly listens to this knowledge with faith and attention, also while engaging in my pure devotional service, will never become bound by the reactions of the material work.
So quite a few blessings in these verses. The one thing that strikes me here is that he's not only blessing the one who's listening, but he's blessing the one who gives this to others. Quite incredible. So one who liberally disseminates this knowledge among my devotees is the bestower of the absolute truth, is bestowing the absolute truth, and to him I give my very own self. So that's immediately reminded me of Srila Prabhupada, right? He dedicated his life to disseminating this to others. And there's so many devotees in the lineage that have done this, that have dedicated their time and energy to this. So Krishna is saying, I give my very own self to those people. Wow, what an amazing... What else could you want, right? You get to be with Krishna. And it's also, if you're thinking about Uddhava sitting here listening to these verses, and they're not just like, oh, verse, it's a conversation, right? It's a flow. So Uddhava is hearing this, and Krishna in this sense is encouraging Uddhava, now I might not be here anymore, but you can experience me. I will give you myself when you share this with others. Because Krishna has been sharing this incredible knowledge with Uddhava, and now Uddhava's responsibility is to distribute it to others, right? So Krishna is encouraging him in this way. Don't just keep it for himself, but pass it on. Okay, so now the next verse, 10:29, is going to remind you of a verse in Bhagavad Gita. So we can read this one.
Have we now completely understood this transcendental knowledge? Are the confusion and lamentation that arose in your mind now dispelled?
So, does that sound familiar? He says to Arjuna. Not exactly the same, but same kind of idea. And actually, he says, Krishna says in the 71st text of Bhagavad Gita, the Upalish Shruti for this conversation with him and Arjuna, he says, one who listens with faith and without envy becomes free from sinful reactions and attains to the auspicious planets where the pious dwell. So he did the same kind of thing, right? He's telling, here's what happens if you've listened to this conversation. Then he tells Arjuna, O son of Pritha, O conqueror of wealth, have you heard this with an attentive mind? And are your ignorance and illusions now dispelled? So you can see there's some similarities in these two conversations with the beginning and middle and end. So he's saying to Uddhava, have you now completely understood this transcendental knowledge? Are the confusion and lamentation that arose in your mind now dispelled? So when we're talking to somebody, like a friend, let's say we're listening to them, they're having troubles in their life and they're going through something difficult, and then we listen to them, we do some empathetic, you know, listening and reflective listening, and maybe they ask us for some suggestions, so we give them some thoughts that come to mind. Then we might say, okay, how was that for you? Did you find that relatable? Do you have any more questions? Are you wanting to share anything else? So we might, especially in a mentor-mentee relationship, right? This is actually maybe more appropriate because Krishna is taking on the role of guru for Uddhava, right? And that disseminating the knowledge to him. So that would make sense. A teacher would say that, right? Does this make sense now? Do you understand how to do this problem? So both to Arjuna and Uddhava in the both purports, and I think that the disciples of Prabhupada here, they're following in that mood of Prabhupada. So in Prabhupada's purport in Bhagavad Gita, he says, if Arjuna didn't feel satisfied, the Lord was ready to re-explain any point or the entire Bhagavad Gita if so required. Wow, so personal and so attentive, right? And then in this purport to the Bhagavatam, Sri Uddhava is an eternally liberated soul, but the Lord placed him in bewilderment and lamentation so that this supreme knowledge of the Uddhava Gita could be spoken. Let's see here. Yeah. Lord Krishna's question here indicates that if Uddhava had not perfectly understood this knowledge, Lord Krishna would have explained the same thing again. You know, because when you say, do you understand now? And the person says, no. And you go and try to explain it again from another angle or something, right? It's kind of a given that if you're saying, so do you get it now or do you understand? That you're also willing to address it if they don't understand and continue on with the discussion, right? So both situations, Krishna is there and he's very, he's giving his time and energy and his entire self to these conversations. He's fully present with these devotees, Uddhava and Arjuna. Yeah, Krishna's very listener focused. It's true. And one other point that I want to point out from this purport is that Uddhava's lamentation arose because he thought he was separate from Krishna, that sentence. So Uddhava had been, Krishna saying, are the confusion and lamentation that arose in your mind now dispelled? So that lamentation came from Uddhava thinking of himself separate from Krishna. Now that's very relevant for all of us, right? We are in that exact situation, thinking ourselves separate from Krishna right now in this world. So if we're self-reflective in our lives, and you might can all think of an example of this, there are times when we feel that way more than others, right? In our beginning of sadhana bhakti, we feel close to Krishna, then we feel separate, close, separate, close, separate, until eventually that gap becomes smaller and we start to feel constantly connected to Krishna, and there's no longer like that, oh, I'm the body in this world doing my thing, right? There's no more spiritual life, material life, spiritual life, material life. It's just one constant connection to Krishna. So when we're going through a period where we forget, we think that we're separate from Krishna, that's when the suffering really happens. And if you think on your life, think about those times, or even those moments when you think, oh, I'm going to figure this out. I'm the whatever. It's very subtle. What are some things that come up for you that make you feel separate from Krishna all of a sudden? It could be a thought. It could be a situation. I'll give you an example. So if for me, if I'm thinking, here's a situation, I have to figure this out and I have to understand it and I have to solve it. And I forget that Krishna is the supreme controller and I get into that space of, I need to figure out my future. Then that separation is created, right? And then I think, okay, I'm the doer. And that immediately causes anxiety or suffering of some kind if it doesn't go the way I wanted or if there's too much fretting about trying to control things, right? So that's an example of creating or being in a space where we're forgetful of Krishna's closeness to us. Yes, Nita, and then.
Similarly, like when there's something very nice being prepared, like bhoga-wise, I think I'm going to enjoy this. This is meant for my pleasure. And then thinking that, oh, what if other people like take it before I get to it? And then that also creates anxiety. Also, I'm thinking I'm the enjoyer. I could enjoy separate from Krishna, even before Krishna has accepted it. I'm thinking of how I can enjoy it.
Yeah.
That's also a very separatist mentality.
And then do you notice, is there something that you notice internally that is like a downside of that? Or like, what is the experience? Is there...
Then there is, we start like taking prasadam on a material level, it tastes good, it like, this was not good with it, we overindulge in it, something. So there's not that spiritual satisfaction which comes from honoring prasad.
Yeah.
Just think of like food for my enjoyment.
Yeah, good point. Yes. Andrea.
And another function of the tongue is the way I feel separate, or when I feel separated from Krishna, is after some bad rounds.
Mm.
There's a very distinct feeling of when you focus and put some endeavor in there, or when you're just on autopilot and just ramble them out. Yeah, there's a distinct feeling of connection and their lack of.
And do you find that an activity that was meant to be spiritual, but when we're not fully conscious, that missed opportunity adds another layer of pain, right? It's like, as opposed to doing any ordinary activity.
It's like 1,000 needles piercing your heart.
Yeah. Yep. Very good analogy. Thank you. Any other thoughts on that? Yeah.
Yeah, anytime I feel those 1,000 needles in my heart or some fear, I think, okay, like once like the fear kind of goes down a little bit, I'm just like, I was fearful because I was away from Krishna.
Mm.
Like, because I've been in situations where I've been somehow feeling dangerous situations, somehow feeling Krishna's presence, and I didn't feel very fearful. And then these little mental things make me very fearful, but it just shows me how far I'm, like, to the degree that I'm afraid, that's how far I am away from Krishna. So if sometimes these fears take a few days and I'm feeling anxiety for a few days, I'm just seeing like, I'm just further and further and further away.
Mm. Yeah, it becomes like, fear becomes a barometer for our connection, right? And I've experienced that very clearly in my life as well, that there were times, the times when I was consciously and unconsciously avoiding Krishna, both, like consciously kind of creating some distance, that was the time when I had experienced the most fear. And I became very aware that that was connected. That as soon as I thought, oh, I want to be separate from Krishna for a while, that suffering, the fear condition increased. So that's a really powerful point. And it's subtle, but I think if we all check into our lives, we'll realize that there's a connection. Because this material existence is a fearing existence. That's the nature of this material world. As soon as we're plugged into it, turned towards the material, fear has to be there because things are going to be pulled from us, things are going to be taken. But as soon as we turn to the eternal, then the fear is not there because we're plugging into our real home, our eternal selves. Yes.
So often, newer devotees will ask, how do I know if I'm, you know, in a state of Krishna consciousness or not? How can I tell the difference? And there's that fear that's present, but then also lamentation and hankering. But when we're in a state of Krishna consciousness, the heart is satisfied. The heart has a sense of satisfaction, and there's the hankering and lamentation kind of aren't there anymore.
That's a nice point. Yeah. One other thing about fearing, I was remembering how Prabhupada would sometimes translate the four conditions of life, right? The eating, sleeping, mating, defending. Defending, he would sometimes translate or express as fearing. So they're equally, you know, they're together, fearing and defending. So that's something that we can't live without when we're in this material world. Eating, we have to eat, we have to sleep, we have to, we don't have to, but we can procreate, and then we also defend, right? We have fear. So those are the four things of the material world. Yes.
For me, sometimes it manifests when I'm away from devotees and away from Krishna. Mm. Specifically, if I'm taking too much mundane association, so sometimes family can be that. So much material sounds, so much talking of so many things of the material world, you kind of forget or you feel separate from Krishna, like inside. Mm.
Yeah, good point. Yeah, association is very powerful. Okay, so let's finish the last few verses. So he's asking, so have you fully understood? And he says a few more things, and then he opens up for Uddhava to respond. So text 30.
Should not share this instruction with anyone who is hypocritical, atheistic, or dishonest, or with anyone who will not listen faithfully, who is not a devotee, or who is simply not humble.
This knowledge should be taught to one who is free from these bad qualities, who is dedicated to the welfare of the brahmanas, and who is kindly disposed, saintly, and pure. And if common workers and women are found to have devotion for the Supreme Lord, they are also to be accepted as qualified hearers.
Text 32.
When an inquisitive person comes to understand this knowledge, he has nothing further to know. After all, one who has drunk the most palatable nectar cannot remain thirsty.
Through analytic knowledge, ritualistic work, mystic yoga, mundane business, and political rule, people seek to advance in religiosity, economic development, sense gratification, and liberation. But because you're my devotee, whatever men can accomplish in these multifarious ways, you will very easily find within me.
A person who gives up all fruitive activities and offers himself entirely unto me, eagerly desiring to render service unto me, achieves liberation from birth and death, and is promoted to the status of sharing my own opulences.
Thank you. And that also reminds you of Bhagavad Gita, right? Those kinds of verses. A person who gives up all, what does that remind you of, that verse? 9-1?
Yeah, non-envious.
To be non-envious, okay. Yeah. Sarvadharman Pratidya. So I was thinking of that too. One who gives up all, who just surrenders everything, abandons all religious duties. So that's how Krishna ends. And then text 35. Shukadeva Goswami said, hearing these words spoken by Lord Krishna and having thus been shown the entire path of yoga, Uddhava folded his hands to offer obeisances. But his throat choked up with love and his eyes overflowed with tears, so he could say nothing. And then he does say something. He steadies himself and then he speaks, and we get a glimpse into how he's feeling the separation. Krishna's still there, but he's feeling that separation in advance. So this was a really powerful section. We heard about how Krishna allows us to come to him by using that which is transient and material, mundane, and even useless, it's the word useless is here described. And we also learned that Krishna has established bhakti yoga as his personal, he's personally delivered this process to us to take advantage of. And then we heard about the benedictions of listening to this Uddhava Gita. And I often thought it would be nice to have like a book with all the benedictions, you know, this, and then you could, before you start a section, you could go, okay, let me see what the pros of reading this section are. Sometimes it can be a motivator, right? I want to read this to help with these things. And then we heard how the ultimate surrender of, giving oneself fully to Krishna is how we can free ourselves from birth and death. So I wanted to end with one thought here, that Uddhava is sitting with Krishna and he's having this really intense personal association of Krishna. It's really, really special. And he's thinking, oh, you know, at any moment this is going to end, right? He's just feeling that longing. I wish this would continue forever, that kind of feeling. So we can actually, in our lives, experience something similar to this as we advance and become purified. And we will start to experience, as we apply ourselves to the process of bhakti yoga, that we can actually be personally with Krishna too. It's not just for Uddhava, it's not just for Arjuna, it's for anyone who wants it. Krishna's there, ready. He's ready for us, he's just waiting for us to look at him. And when, especially through the process of our japa, right, our chanting of the holy names, we can have that personal exchange with Krishna. And as we advance in spiritual life and as we become purified of the things that block us and make us want to go to this material world, right, and cling to the material temporary stuff, as that gets purified, then we become more and more drawn to Krishna, and Krishna draws us more and more towards him. Then we start to hear Krishna. You know, we start to have, it's not just a one-sided thing. It's not just, oh, I'm chanting Krishna's name and it's just a one-sided conversation. Eventually, as the devotee advances, it becomes a two-way conversation. It becomes a two-way exchange of reciprocation. So that's really the wonderful thing about bhakti yoga. It's not that we're hearing these pastimes of only certain people that achieved it. Oh, just that's just for Uddhava, that's just for Arjuna, that's just for the devotees in the Bhagavatam who are sitting directly with Krishna while he is present on the earth. Right? It's not that. It's Krishna's saying this is for anyone. Anyone can experience this. It's just how we apply ourselves to the process that he created. So I feel that this section and also the Uddhava Gita in general, but especially the section we read today, you really get a sense of Krishna's kindness and he's available. He's there. He's ready to help us. He's made it so easy. We just have to want to apply it. And he's even saying here, and if you do all of this, here are some of the perks. Like if we need that, right? If we need that motivation, that's then he's also giving that there. So any other thoughts from this? Like anything? Yeah, Govinda?
The last point you were mentioning, I actually had an experience of this today. Not obviously not to that extreme example, of experience. But the morning japa was a little hard to be absorbed, and I was just like, come on, Krishna. And as I was going, then towards the end, there was some absorption was coming, but then Gopal turned the light, and I felt the separation. It's like, oh no, you know, it's like, I want this to continue.
Yeah.
And so I knew it was like, it's going to come to an end. So let me do my best for those 5 minutes that I have finally. I'm actually having some absorption.
Nice. And sometimes when there's a time deadline, like some deadline that we can tap into that feeling of like, all right, this japa was just starting to, now I'm just starting to feel it and it's almost over. And then that hankering can actually increase it. I wanted to just clarify that earlier when we were talking about when do we feel separation from Krishna, I was talking about the material type of separation, not the transcendental one that starts developing as we come closer. Because what happens in the devotee's journey is they do start to feel separation from Krishna, but in the transcendental way, not in the way of like, oh, I got distracted by my car, but like in the way of, oh, I'm missing you, Krishna, and I want you more. When am I going to see you more? And this japa has become so sweet, and now I have to, I got to do this thing now, but I can't wait to get back to it. And that hankering starts to develop. Yeah. So something to look forward to is actually feeling more and more separation from Krishna, because that means that we're feeling more and more close to him. We're wanting him closer, more and more. So, yeah. Any final thought?
Trying to sell mine like so fiercely, and it's just like rooting me in material energy as I'm trying to let go of material things.
Yeah.
It's like just so, yeah, so it's funny. Yeah.
Sometimes it's hard even getting rid of things, right?
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah.
yeah, I know. Okay, thank you all so much, and Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Uddhava Ki Jai. Vijayanagara Chandra 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 Chandra